Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. Dial 678-ESOG now for a solution to your foundation and waterproofing problems.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So today's going to be a very interesting day around Dog Nation for one pretty big reason. We do this show live on Tuesday morning, a little bit later on this afternoon, a couple of hours from right now, from when I am speaking, by the time many of you hear this, because the overwhelming majority of our audience listens after the live, you know, broadcast. But by the time you hear this, you'll know more about this than I do now. But in a couple of hours from when I'm speaking, Kirby Smart is going to have a press conference. And it's going to be interesting on the basis of what he does or doesn't say about the quarterback situation, because obviously in the aftermath of the loss to Alabama, the quarterback topic has been the hottest on our forum, forum.dognation.com, or in our comment sections on Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. Just people reaching out on social media at Dog Nation Daily on Twitter. That's been the hottest topic here in the aftermath of this, is what did and didn't happen for Stetson Bennett and what Georgia needs to do about this going forward. This is not unique. Quarterback is always going to have a big spotlight on it. And I think a lot of people, probably rightly so, have pointed out some of the things that Stetson Bennett could have done better on Saturday. And if they had gone better, at least in the second half, it would have given Georgia a better chance to win that game. Some of this, as I said before, is fans talking, but in some cases, this is also media talking as well. There's a very interesting article at ESPN.com this week that touched on a number of subjects, some of which we'll get into more later on in the show. But one of the things in particular is the evaluation of what's going on at quarterback for Georgia and what needs to go on. And for Georgia fans right now, this kind of centers around, is Georgia going to stick with Stetson Bennett? Is this the guy for Georgia this season? Or is there a possibility that maybe Georgia might look back to DeJuan Mathis again, who did start the Arkansas game? Or maybe at some point in time, JT Daniels will get a chance to be called out of the bullpen, healthy enough to do so, and he might be able to do some things for Georgia at the quarterback position. That's why the Kirby Smart press conference is going to be interesting today, because either Smart will give some credence to the Daniels narrative about how healthy he is. He'll go into more detail to explain that, because the public words from Smart on this thus far have frankly been a little bit confusing. Maybe that's confusing by design, or maybe Smart just kind of sidesteps all of this not to give any extra information to Kentucky and Florida, the next two opponents for Georgia coming up a couple of weeks from now. And maybe Georgia fans themselves are left frustrated to kind of know what in the world is actually going on here. So that's the stage here for this Tuesday, with Smart slated to give a press conference. It could get really interesting, or Smart could do everything in his power to keep it from getting interesting. We'll have to tune in and find out. You'll be able to see that later on today on the Dog Nation video channels. But as far as what Smart should do, there are plenty of people who are weighing in to share their thoughts on that. As I said, one of those guys, Bill Connolly from ESPN.com. Let me read you Connolly's assessment of the Georgia quarterback situation, and I'm curious how many Dog fans might agree with this. Here's what Bill Connolly writes. We might just be about done with the days of a, quote, game manager level quarterback leading a team to a national title. And Smart might have to take a risk on a, you know, he talks about kind of a high, you know, ceiling, maybe low floor type player, whether it be a JT Daniels or a DeJuan Mathis. He says probably going to be JT Daniels if he wants to get from 9-1 to 10-1 and reach the college football playoff. That's Bill Connolly from ESPN once again saying that if your goal is to win a national championship, Connolly says you may need more than Stetson Bennett, who it sounds like he's calling kind of a game manager. You might need to roll the dice and hope a JT Daniels is good enough. And if that's not the case, then Connolly says maybe you give another look there to DeJuan Mathis. I think that's pretty interesting. And it kind of ties into something I was asked yesterday in our comment section, because I'd been saying for a while that, you know, Georgia doesn't have to have Trevor Lawrence, doesn't have to have Justin Fields. It can get by with just a good enough quarterback. But obviously, as we said on yesterday's show, when you look at the way the Georgia-Alabama game played out, it's clearly more like an NFL-style game than it is a college football-style game. And in the NFL, throwing the football's never been more important. The overwhelming majority of the teams in the NFL throw it 60-something percent of the time. Throwing on first and second down's never been more common than it is right now. And people asked me yesterday, with all that being true, B.A., do you still think it's okay just to have a good quarterback, or do you have to have somebody like Trevor Lawrence at Georgia? I mean, I would say that good is still good enough, and if you want to use the phrase that Bill Connolly uses there, the notion of a game manager, the honest truth is that's not what I think Stetson Bennett is. I would say that for the first 2.5 games of this season, the second half of the Arkansas game that he played in, the start versus Auburn, the start versus Tennessee, I would say that Stetson Bennett in those games played better than a game manager. And in the game against Alabama, clearly the one thing a game manager is supposed to do is protect the football and not lead to turnovers. Bennett clearly didn't do that. So in that game, he was far lower than a game manager. So if you're really trying to evaluate just Stetson Bennett away from whatever might be going on with JT Daniels or anybody else, you've got a couple of games worth of evidence that he, I think, moved past, exceeded the notion of a game manager level quarterback. And in the game against Alabama, he probably didn't even rise to that level. So you're kind of all over the board with what Stetson Bennett is right now before you even get to the consideration of how healthy JT Daniels is going to be. We don't really quite know yet what Smart thinks about Daniels at this point. It's been a little while since he's talked about him, but we do have an idea of what he thinks about Stetson Bennett. And to a degree, on Saturday, Smart did come to his defense after the loss against Alabama. Here is more of Smart on Bennett.
I think Stetson's gotten better. When the level of competition changes, you don't change your evaluation. You know, you have to grow and get better. The experience he gained tonight will be invaluable for him throughout the rest of the run on the road. He's a work in progress, just like our team is. He's going to grow and develop.
I will come back to the notion of JT Daniels in a moment before we're done with this topic, but let me focus just solely on Stetson Bennett here right now on the basis of what Smart just said. He said that he views Stetson Bennett as getting better, and he says that he's still a work in progress, leading you to believe that Smart thinks there's a ceiling for Bennett above the way that he played against the Crimson Tide on Saturday. Some Georgia fans are skeptical of that, but let me give you something else to consider for a moment. When you think about the issue that kind of plagued Bennett big time on Saturday, putting aside the third interception where he really even admitted that he put the ball dangerously in harm's way there, should not have done that. The one common criticism of Bennett, with good reason, is that he got so many balls batted down at the line of scrimmage. And when people see that happening in a game, they're left to say, well, that's never going to change. He's always going to be a quarterback that's a little shorter than we've come to expect big-time quarterbacks to be. So therefore, in big games like this, he's always going to get his balls batted down. And obviously, on Saturday, it was a huge problem. But let's remind you of this here for a moment. Stetson Bennett is not the first quarterback to try to have success without having the requisite height that it seems like other really good quarterbacks have. In fact, when John Stinchcomb, the former Georgia All-American and NFL offensive lineman, joined us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia yesterday, the one thing that he pointed out was that during his pro career, he played with Drew Brees, the New Orleans Saints. Brees himself is not known for being a very tall quarterback, but as John said, there are ways to have success even when your quarterback doesn't have that prototypical height. I thought John was good on this topic yesterday. Here is Stinchcomb from yesterday.
When you're not 6'4", 6'5", sitting in a pocket, you have to create lanes. Having played with Drew Brees, who claims to be 6 foot tall, but I would argue is not, he has to find ways to create lanes. Stetson wasn't able to do that. 5 batted balls, he's got to take ownership of some of those as well. Now, as an offensive line, I'm sure Coach Luke is watching film with the guys today, saying every time a defensive lineman puts his hands up, they should end up on their back, because you're going to punch them right in the chest and put them down and encourage them strongly to never put their hands up again. But at the end of the day, the play of Stetson Bennett, play of the quarterback at Georgia, has to be better if we plan on winning these big games.
So I think that's really true. And as John points out, that there are ways to create passing lanes even for a shorter quarterback. There are a lot of guys in the NFL right now having success that don't necessarily have the prototypical height. So to kind of finish the evaluation of Bennett here for a moment, I think that Bennett has played better in portions of the season than maybe some Georgia fans have given him credit for. And I do think his ceiling is higher than what he showed against the Alabama Crimson Tide on Saturday. But the one thing no one can deny is that if you want to win games like that, as we said over and over again on yesterday's show, you've got to have the dynamic passing plays. In the games with the most NFL talent, that's just going to be the difference in victory. Can you go out there and make the big passing plays? Alabama did that on Saturday. Georgia didn't. One more thing on JT Daniels. As Smart gets ready to speak today, and you hope you have a chance to kind of learn more about just how healthy he is, I mean, in light of everything that Bill Connelly wrote at ESPN.com and everything that Georgia fans have been saying over the course of the last couple of days since the Alabama game and what went right and wrong for Bennett's performance, here's the one question I think I would probably direct towards Smart about all this today. You know, Bill Connelly gives some advice to Smart about how he should make his decision. But what I would want to know from Smart is, right now, is there a decision to be made? Is Daniels healthy and you're just choosing to play Stetson Bennett anyway? If so, I do think Georgia fans deserve to know. Or is this a situation where Bennett is in there and you're lucky that he's played as well as he has because there's really no choice to be made because the health setback that we were told that Daniels had as recently as January is something that still lingers right now. If that's true, I think Georgia fans deserve to know that as well, because what ends up happening is it's a disservice being done to Stetson Bennett when you don't really know the status of JT Daniels. If you knew Daniels was not healthy, the fact that Bennett has played as well as he has would be treated as more, I believe, as a good thing. And if Daniels is healthy, but he's just currently smart, just choosing not to play him for whatever reason, then that seems like valuable information there as well. I don't know if Smart will provide that. Clearly, he doesn't want Georgia's upcoming opponents to know that. But there are a lot of UGA fans who are very curious to hear more about this situation. And as the week unfolds, maybe we'll find out some more about that. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented today by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. It's great to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. Video, podcast, radio, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Spotify, Apple, Google. My gosh, all the different platforms that you can check this show out on. We're thankful for them all, and we're really grateful for our friends at Engineered Solutions of Georgia for making everything possible. You know, Engineered Solutions of Georgia is a solutions-based company. That means they are ready to step to the plate to deal with any kind of foundation or waterproofing issue you might have. Listen, for homeowners, there's nothing that causes a little bit of a pause, a little bit of anxiety more than those things. Water creeping in can be a big deal. Down in your basement or in your garage, your crawl space, that can be the kind of thing that can turn into a much bigger problem later on. Also, those foundation issues. It starts with a small hint. Something needs to be done. The more you put it off, the bigger the issue might be later on. Now, sometimes it's not a big fix, but when it is, you want Engineered Solutions on your side for a couple of reasons. First of all, they're proud partners of UGA. That makes them fun to do business with. But also, they've got two full-time engineers on staff. That means it's the smartest possible people working on what may be the most substantial problem you face as a homeowner. Anything related to waterproofing and foundation is something to get handled and taken care of. So give them a call. Number could not be easy to remember. Simply dial 678-ESOG now. That's 678-ESOG now, and that'll get you in touch with Engineered Solutions of Georgia. All right, it's Connor Riley coming up in a moment. Let's go around the doghouse before that, delivered today by Marco's Pizza. Now, I've got a quick confession for you. So last week, prior to the Alabama game, I had told some people here on our Dog Nation World Headquarters studio that I was a little bit nervous, but the following week's game, at the time it was scheduled to be that way, the following week's game against Kentucky. Now you may say, well, that's just you being a Larry Munson or a Vince Dooley. That's just you being overly worried. And maybe it was, you know, speaking as a fan here for a moment, but I had told some people that I had some anxiety about that game for Georgia the week after having played Alabama. And once I found out that the schedule change was going to take place that made it a bye after Bama ahead of Kentucky and then Florida and then the rest of the season, I actually took that as good news, even though some Georgia fans were a little frustrated that it seemed like the Dogs were being asked to help out another rival the same way scheduling wise they had helped out Auburn in previous years. It looked like to some that Georgia was now having to help out Florida because of the coronavirus outbreak that it's dealing with within its own program and on its campus at the moment. I didn't take it as bad news that way, though. I took it as a potential good thing for Georgia. It was interesting after the game on Saturday, Kirby Smart essentially kind of downplayed the whole thing about the off week being this Saturday when it was not originally planned, moving the Kentucky game back a week. This is Smart on that topic.
Yeah, I don't think the schedule does much. It doesn't really change anything. It just, you know, gives us a week to recover now as opposed to a week to recover before Florida. I mean, we just got to play a really physical Kentucky team first and then go play Florida. And Kentucky is always one of the most physical teams in the league.
So let me see if I can give you a couple of numbers here as to why Georgia being off this Saturday may end up being a good thing. And you may, after you hear all this, say, I'm not quite so sure I agree, and that's fine. But these were the numbers that were kind of on my mind a little bit last week. In 2015, AL.com wrote a story about Alabama and the teams that want bye weeks before Bama and the teams that get their bye week after Bama. And what they said was, if you had a choice of being off before you played Alabama or being off after you play Alabama, you'd always choose to be off after you played Alabama if you wanted more wins. What they wrote in 2015 was that since 2008, teams were actually 21-25 the week after playing Alabama. But when you had an off week after Alabama, the following week after that, teams had been 6-2. Now, this was a few years ago in 2015. The last couple of years, the results are a little bit more mixed. The week after playing Alabama did not seem to be a problem for teams in 2019. Only one team lost the week after playing the Crimson Tide. That was Missouri. But in 2018, it was a pretty big deal. Tennessee had an off week, played Alabama, then lost to South Carolina the week after that. LSU had an off week in 2018, lost to Alabama, and then didn't lose to Arkansas, but a team that went winless in the SEC played LSU in a touchdown there that day. So a little bit of a challenge related to all of that. But more importantly than this, here's the other big reason why I think Georgia being off this Saturday actually matters. And I've been saying this for a while, and for the most part, I seem to be kind of on an island about this. I think one of the most significant challenges facing SEC teams here this season is the challenge of having to do it week after week after week against SEC foes. Do you realize that Georgia, had the schedule remained the same, would have been playing an SEC team for the fifth consecutive week this Saturday against Kentucky? Georgia's only done that once in the Kirby Smart era. You have to go back to 2016 to find five straight weeks of SEC opponents. And Georgia, over the course of that span in 2016, went 2-3 in those games. It wasn't a very good Georgia team. But the fifth of those games was, what, a 17-16 loss against Vanderbilt, coming after a stretch of five consecutive weeks against SEC foes? Now, obviously, Georgia will still have to play a long stretch of opponents before the end of the season. They'll now play 6 weeks in a row after the bye week this Saturday. But honestly, if I'm a Georgia fan, I'd rather do that later in the year against lesser competition. Teams like Vanderbilt to close out the season, maybe a little bit of a challenge from South Carolina, but their bye week's the 31st. So they'll have a long stretch of games leading into that game against Georgia as well. I'm not saying that Georgia would have lost to Kentucky had the game been played this Saturday, but I do think it would have been harder to win than maybe some Georgia fans were giving it credit for. Teams typically have a little bit of a letdown the week after Alabama. Maybe they're a little bit beaten up back in a time when Alabama's more physical, but still it's a challenge to do that again the following week. And for Georgia, it would have been their fifth consecutive game against SEC foes. The one time that happened in the past, it wasn't a particularly good stretch for Georgia, especially the fifth of those games. So from that standpoint, I'm actually kind of happy to have the off week this Saturday. I think it will be put to good use by the Dogs. That's Around the Doghouse. It's delivered today by our friends at Marco's Pizza. You know, Marco's is America's most beloved pizza because it's real, authentic pizza made the Italian way. And right now, there's great savings with our friends at Marco's Pizza as well. You can get a large one-topping pizza with 10 chicken wings or dippers. It's just $17.99. That's great savings. You can get that via the Marco's app or at marcos.com. It's also baked in a 450-degree oven and then delivered touchless right there to you. So good peace of mind for you in a time we're all thinking health and safety, and good pizza as well. Marcos.com or the Marco's app. You can take advantage of that today. And it's great to have Around the Doghouse delivered by Marco's Pizza here today. All right, I want to do more on kind of the week ahead for Georgia, both in terms of quarterback and everything else, with Connor Riley now. We'll get into the SEC schedule for the upcoming week. Some interesting honors being tossed the way of some Georgia players at kind of the midway point of the season. We'll do a lot of that before we're done. But as I said, let's kind of get into everything that's about to happen now for the Dogs. Let's talk to Connor Riley.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Of course, Connor Riley was all over the Georgia-Alabama game on Saturday. Really good stuff from him up at DogNation.com. And Connor will be a part of the Kirby Smart press conference here on this Tuesday afternoon, which, as I said before, many of you will be kind of aware of by the time you hear this show. The overwhelming portion of our audience kind of listens in an on-demand or watches in an on-demand format. But nonetheless, for the live audience, we'll all kind of get ready to learn this ourselves in a moment. And Connor, I want to start with quarterbacks. You know, what I said earlier is that I think that Stetson Bennett's actually played better than some people have given him credit for. But clearly, if you're going to beat a team like Alabama, those NFL-style games are just going to be more about throwing the football than the other portion of the games on the Georgia schedule. And so whoever the starting quarterback is for Georgia has to play better than Bennett did on Saturday, be it a better version of Bennett or someone else like JT Daniels. But the big cloud of confusion that hangs over all of this is just how healthy, just how ready, just how much does Georgia even know about JT Daniels? And with that in mind, I'll let you begin right there. What's your best guess on all of that?
So my big question from Saturday when it comes to the quarterback position is, do you believe that Saturday was just a bad game for Stetson Bennett, which it was, and he will probably admit to that? Or do you believe that it is the definitive proof that Stetson Bennett is not good enough to beat Alabama. And if you believe that it is the latter, then I believe you are largely banking on JT Daniels. To what we know about JT Daniels at this point, he was not cleared until after the Arkansas game. He had a second knee procedure in January to go clean up that ACL. That is why he was not fully healthy at the start of camp. From there, if you've been following the UGA practice photos that they've been putting out, you would have noticed that last week, in the practice photos, he was not wearing a knee brace. I believe that is a first for him in his time at Georgia, and you would theoretically think he is continuing to get more and more healthy. And with that, in a now well-timed bye week, if there were a time to make a move, it might be this week.
So when you say brace, are you talking about the sleeve thing that some folks saw him wearing for the third scrimmage before the season began? Or are we talking about something that actually has a little bit of a mechanical bend to it?
I'm talking about something that has a mechanical bend to it.
Okay, that's interesting because, there had been some chatter that on the day of that third scrimmage that some folks had a chance to see some of the boosters that he wasn't quite wearing the thing that... Yeah, like it just has like the mechanics to it that makes it move. It was more of like the sleeve type of thing that some of you maybe wear when you're jogging, kind of a compression sleeve, something along those lines. So it just sort of adds to the mystery in all of this. I'll say this about Bennett, that I think he is definitely capable of playing better than he played on Saturday. For the first half, it would seem to be proof of that. I mean, really, for the first half, he went blow for blow with Mac Jones in that game. It's only in the later stages of the game that it kind of fell apart for Stetson Bennett. And, obviously it's a two-half football game, so you have to count that into it. But for 30 minutes, Bennett was right there making every play that Mac Jones seemed to play. So I think that Bennett is clearly capable of playing better than the game on Saturday suggests. But I will admit I have my reservations about whether or not he's truly good enough to make the plays necessary to actually win that game. He could have played better, could have made Georgia more competitive, but could he have made one more throw than Mac Jones made on Saturday and allow Georgia to win a game like that on the road against Alabama, which the passing game is just going to be more magnified? I'll admit I have my skepticism about that.
Yeah, the big takeaway from Saturday's game was Mac Jones was just, in my opinion, much, much better than Stetson Bennett was. And the two plays I think that really swung that game for Georgia, where if a ball bounces differently, if a ref keeps a flag in his pocket, are that second interception to where ball ricochets off Jermaine Burton's hands, though I would contest there that was going to be a very difficult catch for Burton over the middle there. That gets intercepted, sets up Alabama with a short field. On the ensuing drive, there is the Eric Stokes defensive pass interference penalty that gives Alabama a first down at the goal line, and they turn that into a touchdown. If the Burton pass is incomplete and the pass interference call isn't made and Jack Podlesny makes a field goal, it is 30-27 instead of 34-24. And at that point, 34-24, Stetson Bennett comes out the next drive and throws the really bad third interception. So the final score I don't think necessarily shows. Well, it does, yes, that Alabama was the better team, and I think it was pretty clear by the end of the game. That was also a close game for, I would say, 75% of it.
Yeah, I mean, football games have a way of getting out of control. The one on Saturday kind of got out of control. We all know the sequence of plays. You just described a portion of that. But there's a sequence of plays that led to this game getting out of control. Alabama made the plays. Georgia didn't. And that's kind of the way that goes. One more thing for me on JT Daniels, though. And here's the one thing that, I mean, Kirby Smart's just not going to talk about this, but I'd love to know more about this. Given the status of Daniel's health, and I do believe for the most part he has been unhealthy enough that playing him just has not really been much of a legitimate option. That's the assumption that I'm making here. But if he's unhealthy enough to play, I wonder how healthy he has been to truly practice, which leads me to wonder how much Georgia has really been able to evaluate him, which leads me to wonder, does Georgia really even know what they currently have in him? This is a guy that hasn't played any football since September of 19. Hasn't played a full season since 2018, has been injured since then, transferred schools. You almost kind of wonder if the time away from football, or he is at least unhealthy enough that it doesn't seem to be a strong consideration of ever having put him in a game. What does that mean for, how much chemistry he's been able to develop at practice? In other words, the notion you're just going to flip a switch and all of a sudden now he's going to step in and play, given how hurt he's been, I just don't know how realistic that is.
I'm going to surprise some people with some analysis here, but if Georgia had felt that JT Daniels was the best quarterback to give them a chance to win on Saturday, they would have played him. I know that might sound surprising given the way I've seen people talk about this, but if Daniels was the guy, he were healthy and he were able to do all those things, I believe he would have done that. I think one last thing for me on this, I wonder what Jamie Newman thought about Saturday. I wonder what he thinks about the Georgia quarterback situation, if he thinks about it at all, because I do believe that Newman would have been the starter and would have held down that job through that Alabama game. And, you know, he has not said anything publicly about it since he has opted out. But if you believed that Daniels was going to be the guy for Georgia after the bye week, you know, this would sort of match up with that timeline as Georgia is now on the bye week. And this would have theoretically, in Newman's mind, of potentially why he left, and this is just speculation here, you know, would have been the time he thought, all right, well, I didn't play well in the Alabama game, that's a loss. Maybe that's when Georgia makes their move, and I just don't feel comfortable, or whatever, for whatever reason, of knowing that I'm going to keep that job for the full season.
Yeah, listen, I think there's a certain number of topics on Georgia football that are just sort of close hold, and we'll just never hear about them ever. And the full Jamie Newman story is one of those things that we'll just never hear. We will never know. Maybe Newman gets asked about it around the combine or something like that. But at that point in time, it's almost like he's so focused on his NFL career that he's got no reason to go back and sort of explain all of that. Or maybe it becomes a relevant part of his evaluation of, did you quit on a team or something like that? Maybe he feels like he needs to answer it. But unless Newman wants to go in detail and give his side of the story, this is one of those things that I think is going to leave Georgia fans frustrated for a number of years, because we're just never going to know what really went on there. Was he good? Was the hype around him in the offseason completely manufactured out of thin air? What happened with Jamie Newman? Unless Newman himself wants to come clean about this, we may just never know.
I'd argue that it will be a bigger unsolved mystery than how the Fromm Fields situation in 2018 ended up going down.
It is certainly interesting. I don't want to do a ton on Alabama because I think people are kind of ready to turn the page, but I do think that you and I were on a similar note about at least one of the things from Saturday. I took a couple of positives from this game in that while Georgia offensively doesn't have the firepower yet to win a game like this, I think they are more powerful offensively than they were a year ago, and I think that Jermaine Burton is a part of that. Now, you rightly pointed out at DogNation.com that, you know, there's some good and for some bad for Burton in this game on Saturday. But for me, the good overwhelmingly outweighed the bad. This is a real weapon. I don't think Georgia had nearly enough weapons a year ago. Remains to be seen if they have enough right now, but they got more than they used to have. Pickens is one. Kiaris is one, although he was taken away on Saturday. And Jermaine Burton is an emerging weapon there. I'll let you talk about him a little bit, but other maybe positive takeaways that you had from the Alabama game on Saturday.
Yeah, I know most everyone was bummed with the result on Saturday, but I think there were some encouraging signs there over the course of the season. Jermaine Burton, I will bring him up. It was his fourth career college game, and in a game of that magnitude, he certainly looked like he belonged on the field there. And while it wasn't a perfect game from him, I will say he did some things that, as he continues to get better, as he continues to grow in this system, should be encouraging. It's already encouraging that he started every game for Georgia, and as a freshman wide receiver, he has looked, to my part, he's done a great job of creating explosive plays. He had the 43-yard run against Tennessee. He had a 36-yard catch against Alabama, and then he had the touchdown right before halftime. So as he gets, you know, more and more comfortable in this offense, I think that's a good sign. I think Kendall Milton had another good game on Saturday. Only 6 carries, but 44 yards. He had a 24-yard run there. I think Zamir White had a nice bounce-back game. He looked sort of more like he did against Auburn in the second half against Arkansas. And Gary, and I don't think you were able to hear this, but on the broadcast, Gary Danielson and Brad Nessler had mentioned that he had been knocked up a little bit in that first play against Tennessee last week. So maybe it was sort of an injury thing that could potentially explain why he didn't necessarily look like his usual self there. The skill players and the offensive line, I will say as well, played well on Saturday. The sort of questions and concerns you had, aside from the quarterback position, I thought played well. And defensively, yeah, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle had their way with the secondary, but those are the best two wide receivers Georgia's going to see all year. And for three quarters, the pass rush and I think the defense as a whole did a pretty good job of keeping those guys in check. The problem, I think, was that in the second half, that front seven just wore down because of the Alabama offensive line. And that, maybe more so than the play of Stokes, LeCount, Campbell, Tyreek Stevenson, was why Alabama ended up having the success they had.
Yeah, I'll follow up on that. I thought the offensive line played well, full stop. I thought for questions that exist about this group after the Arkansas game against the best defensive line it's played all season, even without LeBron Ray, maybe the best you know, unit he'll have to face this year. The Georgia offensive line really held up, creates the pocket it needs to create, gave Georgia a chance to run the ball when it wanted to. I thought that was really good to see. As far as the defensive performance, that's a little bit ugly, of course, but we said going into the game, at least I did, that Georgia needs 30 to win this game anyway.
Four touchdowns.
You know, the notion that you're going to, you know, hold Alabama to 14 points or something like that, that's just not what modern college football is against the very best teams in the country like that.
Yeah, and yes, Najee Harris, I think he had 152 yards rushing. That's more than Georgia had given up going into the season, but it's not like Harris was breaking off long runs. It was, you know, he's getting 5-6 yards every carry, which isn't ideal, but I thought for the most part, except when they sort of salted the game away in the fourth quarter, they did as good a job as you're going to see someone do on Najee Harris. So, while yes, it's another disappointing loss, and the wart on the game is sort of the quarterback play, which has been the bugaboo for Georgia in recent years, overall, there are some encouraging things here, and I think I feel a lot better about the direction of this offense than I certainly did in November of last year.
So, I'll finish with this. I made a big point about this yesterday, that I think the Alabama game for Georgia is in a category by itself, and a potential game against Clemson and Ohio State would be in that category. Last year's LSU games in that category, where there are so many elite players hoarded by so few programs that when it's Georgia versus Alabama, it's really like the 33rd and 34th most talented teams in the world playing against each other. It's like a de facto NFL game. The NFL's never been more about throwing the football than it is right now. When the games are closed and undecided, it's throwing the ball 60-something percent of the time. You know, lots of first and second down throws. Once you've established a level of dominance and you're on your way to winning, then teams have a tendency to start running the ball more. That's just what the NFL has become. And in the game that Georgia played on Saturday, that's what it was up against, and Georgia's not yet ready to win a game like that. But the rest of the season's just college football again.
Yep.
And the team with the more talented defense and the team with the more talented running backs is probably going to beat everybody that it plays. I'll even include Florida in that group right now. I feel much better about the Kentucky game for Georgia now that I know it's got a week to get ready for it. You kind of look ahead to the you know, the Florida game after that. I'm still really confident for Georgia in that game because I don't think Florida challenges Georgia in the way that Alabama's capable of doing that. I'm actually really optimistic about the rest of the regular season right now on the heels of all of this, because these are games, more talented Georgia against overmatched opponents, that are a little bit more what Georgia's been accustomed to for most of the last few years.
Right. Your point about the elite teams having so much talent, it's almost a different sport right now between the teams at the top and the teams below that. Case in point, Georgia loses convincingly to Alabama, I would say, based on the final score and the way that second half played out. They're still the number four team in the country, and quite frankly, I think this Georgia team is much better than Notre Dame, the team that moved up and took the number three spot. Now, granted, I would also include Ohio State in there, but the gap between the super elite teams, Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, and the rest of college football, where you have your Notre Dames, your Texas A&Ms, your Floridas, your Penn States, has just gotten wider this year, and Georgia is pretty clearly better than that second group, but based on Saturday, not quite ready to get into that first group.
Yeah, if Georgia starts Stetson Bennett every game the rest of the regular season, I believe they win them all, Florida included. I don't yet know what would happen in an Alabama rematch. That game becomes just as hard as this game was this past Saturday, and more dynamic passing play is going to be a part of that. But as I said, you can be an Ole Miss team. I did a lot of this yesterday. But you can be an Ole Miss team explosive enough to challenge Alabama, but you can't maintain the week-to-week consistency. You lose the following week against Arkansas. This is about doing two things here. Mm. It's about being explosive enough when you need to, but also consistent enough with running game and defense to beat what should be overmatched opponents. Ole Miss has clearly out-recruited Arkansas, yet couldn't beat them on Saturday. So Georgia gets to revert back now to kind of being a bully against lesser opponents. Don't take that for granted, because that's what allows you to punch your ticket for the rematch coming up in December.
Right, and transitioning here a little bit, if Georgia were playing Kentucky this week, I'd be very worried about this game.
Yeah.
And because we spoke about it, I believe, last Friday before you left for Tuscaloosa, saying you were worried about the bye week. And then Friday night at 7 o'clock at the rather inconvenient hour, the news drops that game will be moved. And while initially I don't think all of us were happy to lose our off week on Halloween.
True.
Georgia getting a week to rest up and prepare for a physical Kentucky team that has a very good offensive line and has a very good secondary as well. I think that really benefits Georgia now to sort of hit a reset button of sorts, get your mind right, prepare for this last stretch, prepare for a tougher than you might expect Kentucky game, because I don't think Tennessee expected Kentucky to do them what they did. Yeah. And Tennessee got flat out embarrassed on Saturday by Tennessee.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. All right, I'm going to intentionally ask you this final question ahead of the Kirby Smart press conference, sight unseen. Do you believe JT Daniels plays against Kentucky and plays against Florida?
I do.
Okay. That should be interesting to see.
I don't know how much. I don't think he starts, but I think we see him at some point in the next 2 weeks.
Very, very interesting to watch that unfold and interesting to hear what Kirby Smart says about that today. Connor, thanks so much.
Yep, it was a pleasure.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Good stuff there from Connor Riley, and he'll be all over what Kirby Smart has to say on here on this Tuesday. It'll be the biggest news day, I would say, of the week, just kind of setting the tone of what's going to happen the rest of the week. And Connor's right down the same page with me. He wrote about this at DogNation.com today. I really think that bye week came at a good time for Georgia. I do. I was worried about Kentucky the week after Alabama. I gave you the numbers as to why. I don't like playing a physical team on the heels of five straight weeks of conference-only play the week after Alabama, two consecutive weeks on the road. All of that is kind of upended by the off week. And you know, you can read between the lines on this. You know, the notion that Georgia needs an off week to beat Florida, if that's true, then Georgia's got a lot more problems than I realize. I'm sorry, I just don't have the level of respect for Florida right now that I do for a team like Alabama. So I'm assuming that Georgia's still fine against Florida, even with some of the problems that might have been identified against the Crimson Tide. And I can only owe you my ultimate candor on that. I still think the Florida game sets up very well for Georgia, even though we've now seen Georgia take a loss. Gators don't play this weekend, much like the Dogs. There are some teams playing. Let's focus in on that here as part of our MyBookie Best Bets. And this will just kind of set the stage for you for the football you will be watching, those of you that will be gathering around a TV in absence of the Dogs here this weekend. Let me roll through some of these. And by the way, some of these point spreads were a little hard to track down here this week because of schedule changes and everything like that. But welcome the Big Ten in for the first time here this weekend. Let me begin with this game, though, because I think this is really interesting. For the second consecutive week, Auburn goes on the road as a field goal favorite. And they were a bigger favorite when this line first opened against Ole Miss, and it plummeted. Now, typically when a line drops heavy, big, quick, that's usually big money coming in and not that sort of small public money. Big, gigantic line moves are usually related to substantial sums of money being bet. So apparently the sharp bettors have completely turned against Auburn here. And it's one more chance for Auburn to really show that it wants to be a part of this 2020 season in any respect whatsoever. I'm going to give myself the criticism that I'm due for this. I treated the Chad Morris hire as if it was a big hire for Auburn. And frankly, had Morris been hired as Georgia's offensive coordinator, I probably would have treated that as a pretty big deal too. Former SEC head coach, guy that was once a $1 million-plus offensive coordinator at Clemson. I thought of Morris as one of the big names that was available in the open market. But Brandon Marcello had some of these numbers for 24/7 Sports. The Auburn offense this year has been worse than the Auburn offense a year ago. And I mean, clearly you have to assume that Morris takes some of the blame for that. Now, Malzahn's also usually pretty good at finding a way to scapegoat offensive coordinators for problems. He once did that with Rhett Lashley. Maybe he's doing that now with Chad Morris, making it known this is truly his offense since it's not going well. But man, another circle the wagons moment for Auburn. Did not go well for them last Saturday against South Carolina. Another chance against Ole Miss, reeling after losing at Arkansas. Alabama goes to Tennessee. Tennessee's a 21-point underdog at home here. This is also a program that's really reeling. We talked yesterday about the defensive line coach being fired. But yesterday, Jeremy Pruitt does his press conference and really sticks with Jerry Garantano, stands by him as the Tennessee quarterback. And it gets ugly there. I mean, Garantano has dealt with so much garbage from Tennessee people over the course of the last couple of years. And some of this is even media stuff in Knoxville. You know, Georgia being near Atlanta has a lot of major market media coverage. And so I think sometimes we lose sight of what it's like to see an SEC team covered by a lot smaller markets. There was a local TV guy in the state of Tennessee who just ripped into Garantano, thought he was going to give a hot take about Garantano on live air. That just seems kind of gross to me. Even with Jared obviously not playing very well, that's just not my style. That's not a very major market media style, to be completely honest with you. But they are all over Jared Garantano there in Knoxville right now. And for Jeremy Pruitt, who had the nation's longest winning streak, seemed like 5 minutes ago, he's lost a couple times since then. And obviously no one expects to win against Alabama on Saturday. 21-point dogs there. Kentucky-Missouri was the game that I had the hardest time finding a line for. I guess it's a 5-point number here at the moment. Interesting here in this game. Now, this is one of those games that you might not typically watch, but it is the future opponent for Georgia. But let me also give you a little bit of a clue in on this. This will be the second consecutive Missouri game that is a schedule change game. And the last time we saw Missouri, they were as 14-point underdogs beating LSU straight up. And now they'll play at home again as 5-point dogs, this time against Kentucky. Kentucky is the darling of the SEC world now after, you know, clobbering Tennessee and, you know, clobbering Mississippi State the week before that. Mark Stoops, one of these coaches that everybody seems to love anyway. I have a little bit of a temptation to say watch out for Missouri here. I have a very, very small temptation to say watch out for Missouri there on that. The rest of these games I'll roll through kind of quick. LSU, 6.5-point favorite against South Carolina. I don't mind telling you, I think that's too much. Although we will see how much LSU has improved after taking the Saturday off last week. They got some stuff to fix. Then outside the SEC, big day for the Big 12. The one team they have that has any national relevance whatsoever is Chuba Hubbard and Oklahoma State. They're 3.5-point home favorites against Iowa State here as the Cyclones try to bounce back. Nebraska, Ohio State will highlight the Big 10 slate. Ohio State a 26-point favorite there. Although the closest game in the Big 10 on Saturday is expected to be Michigan, Minnesota, with the Gophers playing as 3-point underdogs. I have heard rumors it could snow in Minneapolis on Saturday. I don't know if that's true or not, but imagine snow for your season opener. I guess nothing could be more 2020 than that, but why not? Those are your MyBookie best bets. And by the way, if you want to participate in winning season at MyBookie, do that right now by going to go online. Just put MyBookie in your browser. The internet will do the work for you. You can find it. Then use the promo code DAWGNATIONS. One word, DAWG. You can get a huge first deposit bonus. You can get up to $1,000. You can get your first deposit doubled, but you've got to use the promo code DAWGNATION. Then after that, you play, you win, you get paid with MyBookie when you use the promo code DAWGNATION. All right, here on DAWGNATION Daily, presented by Engineered Solutions of Georgia. I mentioned Bill Connelly off the top of the program. He had this like long, huge, you know, piece at ESPN.com. And one of the things he did was kind of highlight some of the mid-season national awards, as he calls them. And what I thought was kind of interesting here is he really has Georgia guys winning 4 of these mid-season awards right now. And on a week in which we could probably use a little bit of good news after, you know, licking our wounds a little bit after the Alabama game, this from Bill Connelly is kind of interesting on this. Here are the guys that he highlights as potential national award winners for Georgia, or what he would call them, the mid-season version of these awards. He's got Ben Cleveland winning the Outland Trophy for the nation's top interior lineman. Now, that's an incredible thing to think that could actually be a possibility there. I've always thought the Outland Trophy is one of the coolest sounding awards that you can win. And it has been a good year for Cleveland thus far. You'd love to see him be able to do that here this season. So Cleveland has the potential Outland Trophy winner. How about the Butkus Award win? He's got that for the midseason going to Azeez Ojulari. Conley's also got Ojulari as either like the Benarik Award winner or the other National Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. I think it's kind of funny to see Ojulari mentioned in these terms right now, just given that one of the topics of the offseason was maybe Ojulari not getting enough attention, not showing up on preseason All-SEC lists and things like that. But right now, Conley from ESPN's got him winning the midseason Butkus and the midseason Bednarik Award as the, I guess, Nagurski is the other Defensive Player of the Year award. He's got him potentially winning that there as well. And then, of course, he's got Jake Camarda, the Georgia punter, potentially winning the Ray Guy Award. Kirby Smart called Camarda a weapon Saturday against Alabama, and I don't think that's too strong of a way to say that. I thought Camarda was incredibly valuable for Georgia there in that game. So it's fun to think about potential national award winners, but it's also, I guess, appropriate to say this way. I think one of the things that we struggle with sometimes is, and I've said this now for years, that when you are like the second best team in the SEC and the fifth best team in the country, something that Georgia's kind of been the last couple of years, and you're always trying to get over that Alabama hump or potentially that Clemson hump, there's just not a very good way to measure progress. And so what ends up happening sometimes in message boards or forums like our forum or comment sections like our live video, when Georgia loses, there's this tendency to kind of revert back to the same old Georgia, nothing's changed in 35 years, or, you know, just whatever people are kind of, you know, saying in respect to some of that kind of stuff. And I get the frustration after a bad loss, too. And it's not necessarily my intention to just sort of sugarcoat everything, because there's clearly some stuff that Georgia needs to change. But if you're looking for evidence that Georgia is a program on a more firm footing than it was a few years ago, I do think the national award category is a pretty good place to go. for some of that kind of stuff. I mean, Georgia had Roquan win the Buckus in 2017. DeAndre Baker won the Thorpe Award in 2018. Rodrigo Blankenship won the Lou Groves Award in 2019. We still got a half a season to go. There's no way to know if Ben Cleveland stays on the pace that Conley thinks he's on, or if Azeez Ojulari does that as well, or maybe Jake Kamada too. But if Georgia could have another year's worth of a national award-winning player, it's a small consolation compared to team success, winning the SEC, getting back to playoff, winning the national championship. But it's also not nothing, to intentionally use a double negative. It is an example and evidence of the stature this program continues to gain, and maybe a precursor to the eventual team success that could follow after that. Let me also say this real quickly. Go to DogNation.com. Check out the Dog Nation Ultimate Fan Contest, courtesy of our friends at Kroger. You may be Dog Nation's Ultimate Fan. If you are, you can submit a video. We'll have voting on this coming up. You could win a $500 gift card, courtesy of our friends at Kroger. Also, a lot of those Dog Nation Kroger-branded masks that you've heard us talk to you about, you have a chance to win one of those as well. So prove to us that you're Dog Nation's Ultimate Fan. Go to DogNation.com, see the contest, courtesy of our friends at Kroger, and register for your chance to win today. I got a pretty interesting tweet yesterday. So during the offseason, I had touted the possibility that Georgia could beat Alabama twice this year, said that they would. And obviously after Saturday, that prediction looks pretty foolish right now. But someone either just trying to be nice to me, or maybe taking the most optimistic tone possible. And I forgot to get the name on this. I'd love to give the person credit. But they said, BA, Georgia can still beat Alabama twice and may have to if it wants to win a national championship. Obviously, the SEC championship game is the next potential rematch that looms between these two teams, but there's already a lot of talk that Alabama, if it makes the SEC championship game undefeated, ought to be one of the teams in the college football playoff. I'm a big believer that there'll be two SEC teams in the playoff here this year. So maybe the chance of still beating Alabama twice still exists. SEC championship, possible rematch, maybe the national championship. It's fun to think about. Here's something else that's fun. Gator Hater Updater. How about this? 1,452 days. We'll see you tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by ESOG.